From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 14th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Joe Vaclavic. He's at Standard Grain in Chicago, Illinois. A bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility. That's their ethanol plant outside of Logansport, Indiana. We'll hear about Bayer's purchase of Monsanto. It was announced today, and then there were three. More on that in our agricultural news segment. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, the futures finished higher in the corn pit today. September contract at 3.22 1/4, 3 cents higher. December 3.31 3/4, up a penny and 3/4. In July, up 2 at 3.56 1/2. September soybeans up 3 3/4 at $9.72. November, a penny and 1/4 lower at 9.42 3/4. January at 9.48, down 1 cent. Bean oil, 5 cents lower. Bean meal up $5.30. Wheat futures finish the July of next year at $4.49 3/4, 3 1/4 higher for the soft red. The hard red July at $4.55, up 2 3/4. Live cattle futures in the October, $105.95, $1.27 1/2 higher for the day. October feeders were down 27 1/2 cents at $130.27 1/2, and lean hogs in the October, $1.65 lower at $55.10. We're now joined by Joe Vaclavic. He's at Standard Grain in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Joe.
No problem at all. Kind of a slower day in the markets today.
Why was that the case?
Well, we had some early week pressure. You know, we had the USDA report on Monday. I probably argue that that report was bearish to neutral. It wasn't a huge surprise by any means. The soybean yield number that USDA printed was a little bit higher than expectations. So we did see some early week pressure on that. I also think we've got a little bit of harvest pressure starting to make its way into the market. You know, this time period starting in mid-September through really the first week in October is from a seasonal standpoint, from a historical standpoint, about the most negative 2 or 3 weeks of the year in terms of price performance for corn and soybeans. We always see a lot of selling pressure, it seems, during this time of year, and that can be exaggerated in a year like this, where we've got record crops coming and we've got kind of a healthy beginning stock situation.
Does it worry you that soybeans in the November contract traded below 950 yesterday and haven't recovered yet?
Yeah, it does worry me. You know, something we've bottomed out in that no bean contract on three separate occasions now, right around that 940 level, give or take. So you've got kind of what I would call a triple bottom on the charts. From a technical standpoint at that area, very rarely do you see those kind of levels hold. So I think that from a historical standpoint or from a chart pattern standpoint, at least, a lot of people would expect the bean market to make some new lows here, especially given the timing that I talked about earlier. It just seems like a perfect, almost too perfect setup for a move sharply lower.
You know, so just awaiting confirmation or at least the harvest pressure to come into the marketplace. In the bean space, though, in the near term, basis levels have been very good. Supplies in the bin at this time are really short, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that that has helped to support the basis level. Now, what's going to happen with beans here is kind of interesting. I don't think that beans are going to be stored in the way that farmers will store corn or wheat. You know, there's just not the carry in the market to incentivize that. And there's going to be a lot of competition for this storage before, as we've talked about many times. Beans are going to be the ones to be sold. So that could be something that maybe pressures the market near term, but it could be a friendlier factor for the market longer term, you know, into the end of the year, into 2017. You know, unfortunately, as is always the case, it seems like when the farmer doesn't have strong ownership, that markets have an easier time rallying. And that could be the case in the beans, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months down the road, because I do think a lot of these beans are going to be sold because of the carry structure in the bean market versus the corn market and the wheat market.
Farmer is capable still, I think, of making money on their soybeans. Are you advising at all that they buy back anything that they sell?
Not necessarily. You know something, if you made money growing beans this year, you probably didn't make money growing corn. I would probably say keep that money in your pocket and at least say that you made money doing something, because we know that the corn is not profitable unless somebody was very, very aggressive up in those highs in June. And even then, it's still difficult to eke out a profit this year. So, you know, the risk manager in me says that, you know, we're already looking at razor-thin margins here. To go out and spend another 20 or 30 cents to re-own something on paper, maybe that's worth your while, but you got to remember that that's 20 or 30 cents off your bottom line at the end of the day, no matter which way you slice it. I mean, it keeps you in the ball game, but when margins are this thin, it's really tough for me to get on board with something like that.
How much lower do you suppose we can go in corn? Will the harvest pressure push us into new contract lows?
Well, seasonally and historically speaking, yes, we should go into new contract lows. That being said, we're still a good 15 or 16 cents away from those lows back in August. So, you know, it's no guarantee that we haven't seen a low already. But, you know, historically, we should grind lower into that first week in October. I don't think harvest pressure has really started to affect the market in any real drastic way. We're going to start to see that during the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, you got to think at this point in the year that the path of least resistance is lower, and that if we do rally, the rallies are going to be met with some pretty aggressive farmer selling here.
From the Monday USDA reports, if you had to pick some numbers out you want to talk about, are they the yield numbers for soybeans and corn or something else?
The yield number for beans was probably the biggest sticker shock item on the report. 50.6 was, I think, a bushel and a half almost above the average trade guess. So that's a big sticker shock item there. The corn yield number was not as low as some people would have hoped. I think everyone believed that USDA would drop their yield estimate, and they did, but not as big as what some people would have liked. I think the demand estimates for soybeans are just fantastic. I mean, these are some very, very strong numbers we're looking at here. We are not hurting for demand by any stretch. So that those numbers, the fact that they continue to be ratcheted higher is very impressive. USDA actually reduced some of their corn demand numbers, which is kind of a red flag to me. We hope that we don't see more of that in the future. And, of course, a lot of that's going to depend on price action. Lower prices, I would imagine, stimulates more demand.
As of recent, funds and algorithm traders seem to have been into the marketplace with a lot of money, and they can, while they can move the market, while it won't stay, it does move along with them. Have you gotten a rhythm from them, and are you able to move with them and see that happen in the marketplace?
I don't know if it's a rhythm necessarily, but, you know, what we know about the situation is that managed money is record short the Chicago wheat market. They're near record short the corn market, and they're holding these near record short positions at some historically very low levels. You know, the corn market, as we've talked about before, really kind of restructured in 2005 or 2006 in what I would call the post-ethanol era since then. We haven't spent very much time at all below $3.25, much less below $3.50 in this corn market since that ethanol era. So these guys are really pressing their luck down here with a record short or near record short at these kind of levels. I think the lowest we've traded since the ethanol era in corn is $2.90, and I think that lasted for all of about 5 minutes one day in 2007 or 2008. So this is kind of an aggressive short position for some very, very low price levels historically. And the wheat market is very similar. We're at 10-year lows in the wheat market, and the funds are record short. So I think that if anything, that those fund positions in the corn and in the wheat market could be a silver lining at some point. It's an inevitability that you're going to see a short covering event. The only question is, from what price level does the short covering event occur, and when does it occur? You know, it could be a rally from 280 up to 3.25 in corn. We hope that's not the case, but you got to assume that short covering event happens at some point in time.
Do you have in your mind a way to trace that out between now and, say, the end of the year?
Well, common logic, seasonal charts would tell you that October 1st is when things start to turn. That's what we saw in 2014. The market just turned on a dime on October 1st and really worked its way higher back toward the end of the year. I don't know if you're going to see anything like that this year, but the seasonal patterns would suggest that something along those lines takes place. I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of major low, you know, during the next 4 or 5 weeks. The timing, of course, is always very difficult. I certainly not bearish the corn market by any stretch of the imagination over the long term from these levels. I think that these are very good long-term support levels, but that doesn't mean we have to go higher right away. It means we could spend some time in the $3 to $3.25 range. Maybe you spend a little bit of time under $3, but very big picture here, I think you still got to be friendly from these price levels.
Hey, thanks, Joe, for taking the time with us. We appreciate you being on the show today.
Happy to be on. We'll talk to you later, Todd.
Yes, indeed. That is Joe Vaklavic. He's with Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, Bayer today agreed to buy Monsanto for $128 a share. It's a deal valued at $66 billion. Regulators will need to approve the deal before it's closed sometime in 2017. The acquisition will evenly split Bayer's product lines between the healthcare and agricultural industries. Monsanto has more than 12,000 U.S.-based employees and is headquartered in St. Louis. Under the merger agreement, Bayer's Global Protection Unit will be headquartered there, with the overall crop science headquarters in Germany. It will also maintain a presence in Durham, North Carolina, and combine its digital farming activities in one unit in San Francisco. The merger between Bayer and Monsanto marks the fifth major deal in agriculture in the last year. It is preceded by an approved Syngenta-ChemChina acquisition and proposed mergers between Dow and DuPont, Potash Corporation and Agrium, and John Deere and Precision Planting. Some U.S. farm organizations are concerned about the consolidation and worry, colloquially speaking, the marriages are for convenience and may not represent the best interest of farmers, ranchers, and consumers. Next week, the Senate Judiciary Committee will review the trend in agriculture and its expected impact on market competition, innovation, and jobs. The Bayer-Monsanto merger would create the third and last of three agricultural life sciences company mergers, with Dow DuPont headquartered in the United States, Bayer in Germany, Europe, and Syngenta ChemChina in Asia. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnittke is here, agricultural economist from the U of I. Last week, USDA NASS released the bi-county cash rent averages for the Midwest. You've taken a look at the numbers for the state of Illinois. The last time this was released was in 2014, so they skipped a year, but they started when, in 2000?
Yep, so NASS began releasing county cash rents in 2008. Did every year up till 2014, skipped 2015, now I've done 2016, and now are on a every other year schedule. So the next time we'll likely see county cash rents from NASS is in 2018.
In Illinois, which county was the high and which one was the low?
Yep, so as always, we have a range. Our high county was Sangamon County. They take the king status of $301 per acre. The low county was Johnson County, Southern Illinois, $55 an acre. So you can see we have quite a range in cash rents across Illinois.
You decided to take those numbers and fit them to average.
Average corn yields, our expected corn yields. What we did was we calculated trend yield for 2016, which would be our best estimate of the county yield or before the fact. So, you know, we used historical data to do that, and we related the cash rents to those trend yields so that we could see how trend yield influenced the cash rent. And there's a very obviously strong relationship between trend yields and cash rents. That relationship explains close to 80% of the variability in the cash rent data.
Can I talk about a few of the counties that are outside of the range, and folks that want to look this up can find it at the FarmDoc Daily website, where they'll see a graphic showing the cash rents along with the trend yields. The lowest one down on the bottom that's way outside of the range.
That's Johnson County, 55 bushels or $55 per acre. That's a low compared to what the trend yield would suggest. Sangamon County is one of our higher counties as far as what trend yield suggests, so its cash rent is above what the trend yield would suggest. Same with Logan, and same for Edgar County.
And so you have Sangamon and Logan and Edgar, which are the top three, I assume.
Well,
there
Edgar
on.
Isn't quite the top three, but it's close right there.
Yep. So top three on as you look at the graphic, and then there's a hanger out here, which looks like it is maybe the county with the highest differentiation between its trend yield and its actual cash price. What county is that?
That is Edgar County. So.
Oh, that's Edgar County. Yeah, All right. What do we know about that? Why is that the case?
I don't really know. It just happened in this data. It appears to be the case, and why it is, we don't know.
All right. So what can we learn from this? Anything at all, or is it just an interesting look at the
markets? So what we did here was we looked at those trend yields and cash rent relationship and used it to indicate what an average cash rent was for different expected yields. So for example, given what we see at the county, if we have a farm that has a 200 bushel trend yield, and a good way to come up with the trend yield for a farm is take the average for the last 5 years and add a bushel or two. So if we expect to get 200 bushels per acre, the average cash rent according to this county data with the trend yield relationship fit through it would be $281 per acre. So it gives you a feel. If you have 200 bushel land, the average is probably somewhere in that $281 per acre. Just to give you another feel, 180 bushel land would be $230, and 150 would be $153 per acre.
Benchmark going rates
for 2016. Note that they're going to be downward pressure on those. So 2017, it's likely that those will be moving down. And actually, if we're at those levels, farmers probably are not making money in 2017, at least given our yield and price projections at this point in time.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You can find the article that he wrote about this called 2016 County Cash Rents on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated. Hey, Drew, I want to start with the forecast for South America as it relates to La Nina. We know that that has a big impact on growing conditions during their season, and that's just beginning. So where do we stand at this point?
Well, you know, we've got La Nina-like conditions where the ocean temperatures are a little bit cooler biased right now, but they are not, they haven't gone cool enough to qualify as a La Nina event. And of course, NOAA came out a week or so ago and said that the odds were pretty much against going into La Nina for this this autumn or winter. And I kind of have to agree with them a little bit. Looking at the data, there isn't much incentive for sudden insurgences of greater cooling to take place. So with that said, the South America forecast is going to be a little tricky this time around because we are going to have a slight bit of flavor from what is a little La Nina-like, but for the most part, other weather patterns will be prevailing. So that is going to translate into this. For the next 30 days, I believe we're going to have some very dry weather. In Argentina in particular, especially the west and north, and very warm temperatures. Brazil will also be very warm and dry in the north, including Mato Grosso and portions of Goiás and Tocantins and Bahia and northern Minas Gerais. All those areas will continue to be dry through the middle of October. The southern parts of Brazil will see some rain. It'll be timely, but yet lighter than normal, and enough that some fieldwork will likely take place, but there'll be some grumblings about the lack of moisture. And then as we get into the October 15th to November 15th time period, during that 30 days, we'll see rain beginning to increase. It'll increase more in southern Brazil and center west Brazil than it will in Argentina. We'll probably continue to have somewhat of a dry bias in parts of Argentina during that 30-day period, although rain should be occurring more routinely. The situation in Brazil will get better in that period from October 15th to November 15th, so the planting will be moving along at a fairly good clip. conditions in the following 30 days from November 15th to December 15th will likely be plenty moist. I think we're going to see timely rains in a significant manner in Brazil, and Argentina weather will improve as well, although Argentina will always still be a little bit of a lagger on precipitation. So there may be some ongoing drier tendencies there. But Brazil, I think by the time we get into the heart of November and early December, I think it's going to be raining fairly routinely. If La Nina comes back into play in a major way, then I think we could probably see a little more dryness in Brazil. But I just don't think we've got enough of that in the oceans right now to cause a real serious problem. And the 18-year cycle does support some timely rainfall. It's just a little bit late in coming.
To summarize, then, they'll start and not be terribly delayed?
Yeah, you know, we have to keep in mind that starting tomorrow is when they can plant soybeans in Mato Grosso. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure on some of those farmers who want to plant corn later in the year to get started here in the next 2 weeks, and they're going to find it being a little too dry. And the marketplace will start echoing that a little bit. So even though what you just said is completely right, I think there'll still be enough dryness concerns in this next 30 days that it will still drive the market a little bit higher.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.